RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the show. Jeff Crushell here. Brendan Clack behind the glass, covering for the con man who's had a Halloween howler experience that I think he's recovering from today, and rightfully so. It's that time of year once again. And joined in studio, a real special day today. It's very festive around here. Our good friend Matt Awanek from the Dave Jamieson Show, and let's face it, he's the boss man here at TSN 1260.
Let's not get carried away here.
Well,
Jeff,
we know who's calling the shots around here, Matty. When we have a problem, I know who to go to because you have all the answers. And that's just comforting, man. It's comforting. I'll tell you that right now, right off the bat.
Well, there's a couple of people that I'm always will be there for, and you're one of them.
Excellent. Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. Well, thanks for coming in today, because I'm really excited about today, especially after the Friday night treat. The Fall Classic just took on a whole new meaning for me personally. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about Major League Baseball and how the game has changed. I don't think there's another sport in the professional ranks right now, or even in the developmental levels, that has changed as much as the game of baseball. And there's a bunch of reasons why. We're going to talk about how the game has changed and maybe what we can start looking at in other sports, because it's changed a lot. And last night, we have to talk about as well. Matt, we had a great conversation earlier in the week, and I was really intrigued, because one of the things I wanted to discuss, this weekend was athlete development and strategies for development. We've got a lot of texts and a lot of emails at Crush Performance here over the last couple of weeks. I've been doing a lot of speaking lately, which has been a ton of fun this fall. But the feedback has been tremendous. People really wanting to dive into the art form and the ins and outs of long-term development and tapping into potential. I'm talking weekend warriors. I'm talking really serious recreational athletes, developing athletes looking for college scholarships and pro opportunities, and also our pro guys, and not just the pro guys, the guys who are working and developing pro guys. So it's been a really, really great fall at Crush Performance. And I want to talk about that today. But our conversation about you and your golf game, I think, really summed it up. So I'm glad you came in.
Oh, I'm looking forward to chatting about this. I usually just get mocked for my golf thing. So to actually seriously talk about it is great.
Yeah, no, I like your passion for golf and the fact that you have a plan. So we're going to break it down. We're going to talk to people about it because there's a lot of things we can extrapolate just in terms of development. I thought it's a great fit. So I'm glad you came in today. And Brendan, thanks for covering today. Really appreciate it. And it's always good to have you in. We're going to be talking baseball at the beginning, talk with Matt about development. But at the end of the show, and I wanted to dedicate an entire episode to this, the fall's really, really crunching down on us, but I wanted to have a serious talk about the NCAA and the issues that that organization is facing, especially when it comes to all of the press, not just the FBI investigation, but all the press it's been getting for the amount of money they make and the players don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big thing. We hear about it every year, and especially it kind of comes around at March Madness time is when it really peaks, because March Madness is such a big event in brings in so much revenue, especially for CBS. You think about March Madness all month there. It begs a good question. There's a lot of athletes in college that peak in college. Like, there's a lot of guys that get injured right after, or stars or Heisman. We look at Tim Tebow, an example, a guy that was a Heisman winner, and then after that, his career kind of petered out. And yes, he's still a big name, but there's guys that need the money as an athlete to be paid in the NCAA. So it's good. It's a good way to kind of get into that discussion and figure out, you know, what do you compensate athletes at that level?
Right. So you guys, I don't want you to answer this right now, but I want you to, if you know this number, great. If you don't, I'm going to put this out to you guys and everybody, because we're going to address this in the final segment of the show. How much revenue do you think the NCAA generated last year in 2017? We've got the numbers. We don't have 2018. Of course, it's still underway. But just think about that for a second. Major League Baseball tipped the scales last year. They broke the $10 billion mark in annual revenues, which is a big, big number. And getting to our topic today, the game is changing. And you guys, if you have comments on this, I'd really like to get your insights, because I know you guys are great baseball fans. But we also have a question of the day for our listeners. I'd really like to get your input as well. Baseball has changed a lot, and there's a bunch of reasons why. If you look at it, we can talk about probably the youth We could talk about the changes in front office and the players and the managers. You know, we see a trend to younger generation, this new generation. We've also seen the impact of numbers and technology on the game, and also the social media and the influence of the population. A bunch of numbers we're going to go over here, but the game has changed. So the question of the day, what do you think in terms of sports, which sport has changed the most over the last little while? Rule changes, player safety, technology, the numbers have all influenced changes, but which sport has changed the most in your eyes? If you agree with baseball, let us know. But let me hand this off to you guys. Is there a sport that has changed more than the game of baseball? I couldn't think of one when I did the research.
Hockey is one that is constantly changing with the rules. Every single year we hear about actually some significant rule changes the league goes through. But they don't have as much of an impact when you're just watching it casually. Whereas baseball, the strategy of baseball this season has completely changed. You know, it's not even like this has been a slow process. All of a sudden, this opener concept has come up where it's not about having your starting pitcher go 5, 6, 7 innings anymore. It's about going right to the pen. Get the first guy in, have him go 3, and then you start working the bullpen. Like the days of trying to find the workhorse ace pitcher seems to be fading somewhat with some teams in their concepts. We saw it in a playoff game where I can't remember which pitcher it was, but he went out for one batter. He went out for one guy to start the game and then got pulled. Like, I don't know. The loyalists and the longtime traditionalists of baseball must be just so annoyed by seeing this. Last year, we saw the shift come into play really as a bigger year. We've seen that for the last few years, though. And now you add in just what teams are doing with the pitching. It is completely different from what we were watching 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That it's with all the rule changes hockey has had, it's not as significant as what we're seeing in baseball.
It's funny you say 5 years ago, Matt. I'm gonna throw a number at you, Brandon. Get this number. This last year, and these are 2017, 2018 numbers. So these numbers are 2018. Okay, this last year was the first time in history that there was not even 1,000 games played in Major League Baseball where the starter went through the lineup 3 times. Which means the starter was pulled before the 3rd time through the lineup. The first time in Major League history. Okay, the number of relief pitchers, there was 2,000 more pitchers used this year than 5 years ago. That's why I'm surprised you said 5 years. 2,000 more. There was an average, on average this year, in 2018, 16,335 pitchers used in Major League Baseball. 6.72 per game. So you're right. I think that's one thing that's really, really changed. It's one of the most striking numbers that I've seen out of baseball. Brandon, in terms of sports that changed, is there a sport? I mean, we see the rule changes. And Matt, yeah, we've seen some big changes in hockey for sure. But baseball, boy, I'm just telling you, is there a sport you think that's changed dramatically?
Well, I think I agree on baseball because some of the other sports that have changed just because of concussions and the way that those have been treated. I mean, look at hockey. Hockey's changed because more smaller players and skill is kind of taking over that goon role, that enforcer. That's been phased out. The physicality has changed. So you're not talking about a guy like Donald Brashear being on the ice anymore and he's policing. You're talking about Johnny Gaudreau running around and maybe gets hit by Charlie McAvoy. And all of a sudden there's controversy. That's the concussions and the injuries. That has changed the game for hockey for me. And then football is kind of like that, too. Concussions are changing. Just recently, we're noticing the roughing the passer penalties are taking a huge... They're changing the way that the defense players can hit quarterbacks. That's been a big thing. So baseball is unique because it's changing as just the game itself. It's not because of injuries it's not necessarily the same way that the other sports are changing.
There has been a continental shift in baseball. Mm-hmm. Matt, you mentioned the number of shifts in baseball. Well, this last year, the number of shifts used was up 30% from the previous year, and it's up 500% since 2013. And if you look at that right there is a striking number. In 2018, there was over 34,000 shifts. In 2010, there was only 2,400.
Because it works.
Yeah, it does work. Ground balls are almost a death sentence now, though it's nice to see some balls getting hit on the ground, balls in play. But we've also seen in baseball this last year, the longest time frame between balls in play. Over 4 minutes on average this last season between balls put in play, which is the slowest ever. And I think because of this, and there's a bunch of numbers we can talk about, but I think because of this, attendance is down. Attendance is down dramatically. And of course, the Blue Jays are the biggest victims when it comes to this. So the game is changing, and it's not for the better. I mean, Manfred comes out this last week and talks about how he's concerned about the decrease in attendance. They have to fix it. But guys, here's the thing. This is going to come down to the developmental, and it already is. They're talking to 12-year-old kids about launch angle when they can barely swing a bat right now. So it's changing the way we're going to be developing players. So I think we're seeing a big shift in baseball.
Well, you know, the one thing is somebody who's never, you know, played professionally or even close to that in baseball. It's one of those, you sit there and watch a shift and you just say, learn how to hit to the other side.
Right.
There's an open hole all between, you know, usually second and third. Hit it there. Learn how to hit it there. So hopefully kids get trained as they're growing up now to try to learn how to accurately put the ball in play where they want to, you know, sending it exactly where they want. And that will, because I hate the shift. The shift is terrible for baseball because it's boring and it takes away runs. And we want to watch, you know, we want offense in sports. But I get why the shift is there. And I don't think you could put a rule in place to try to get rid of it because that's not fair. Like it's part of baseball. But you can get rid of the shift very quickly if all of a sudden the batters learn how to hit the other way.
Exactly.
It's gone.
Yeah, so I'm not worried about it. No. I know there's been a lot of talk about the shift. I don't like it. But if those numbers are there and you have a better chance of getting a guy out, you have to use it. You cannot not use that information. It's impossible. And it's crazy to even talk that way. Teach your hitters to hit the opposite way. These guys are good.
But they just want the home run.
Yeah, they do.
They're just going to swing for the home run. It's no... Go get the singles.
Yeah.
Go fire the ball opposite field and you'll get on base.
So
and
again,
then the shift will stop.
That home run, this home run era too has also, again, based on numbers. Let's talk about for a second where the home run trends are coming from, swinging for the fence. For the first time in Major League history, another historical number, there were more strikeouts than hits in the season. There was 188 more strikeouts than hits this last season. And that's a concerning trend because it's never happened before. But also it changes the fan experience and the flow of the game. But it also really, really indicates a change in the attitude of the hitters. We know the pitchers are throwing harder than ever before. The number of 100 mile an hour fastballs is up dramatically and there's more to come. But the hitters are approaching it differently. The launch angles, the bat speed that we're training now, and of course the sport vision has changed everything. And I think that also is resulting in the home run push, because the ground ball with the shifts, you can't afford to put it on the ground because it's an out. So you have to try to get it over the fence. And we're seeing this spin off of that. I'm not necessarily sure it's good. I think what's happened here, would it be fair to say, you guys, that we've sort of redlined on this? Everybody's gone so far to the right. We're now going to calibrate. And now we're starting to see teams bunt again. There was a couple bunts in the game on Friday night. Fantastic. So I think we're seeing it slowly start to revert back. That I believe the team that can get back to the basics first is going to have a massive advantage. We're going to see this up and down, I think, for the next decades.
Oh, without question. And it's, but the one thing I don't think is that changes is this opener concept, because I get why you go with that. If you don't have a Clayton Kershaw, if you don't have a Chris Sale, I get the idea of don't let the opposing batter see your pitcher twice, because that's got to, like, they can't develop any sort of comfort. And that doesn't go away, though. I don't think there's anything that's going to happen that's going to get rid of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
That one's in this game for good.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the shift, we'll see. I'm with you. I think we're going to go away from the shift for a while, eventually, because players will learn how to hit against it, and we'll see the bunting, all that. And then, again, some point, somebody's going to go back to the shift, and we're all going to go to the opener, I think, is here to stay.
Yep, I agree. I think you're right. And again, in terms of just management and injury prevention as well, if you look at the volume, I think it's a good thing. So let's spread that workload out over a number of guys, and let's get them ready. Let's get them ready to handle more innings collectively as a group.
I love the starter, though, Crush.
No, I do, too.
I love that guy who can go 8-9 innings every so often and just I don't want that to go. I'll be that baseball traditionalist. There's all those people about the DH. Mine will be the starting pitcher workhorse. I want the ace.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want a staff loaded with aces.
Listen, when a Verlander comes around, you know, we could talk about Scherzer or Kershaw. There's such a great group of excellent starters right now. Just try to walk out onto that mound in the third inning and take him out. But I'm going to be intrigued.
But are we going to develop then our ace pitchers?
Right. Well, and this is what's going to change, right? So the game is changing here. We're seeing teams this year start the game with a closer and bring their starter in the second or third to go six innings in the middle of the game. And that's just to give the hitters another shit to throw the hitters off, because they don't want the hitters going three times, seeing the pitcher three times through the lineup, because you can make adjustments. Anyway, it's crazy. It's crazy. So a couple texts coming in, and I love this stuff. Okay. Here's one from Ken. I actually think hockey's a good answer. The speed of the game has become so important that so many proven veteran players are either out of a job or on PTOs, and these guys are sometimes still in their 20s. So the speed of the game in hockey has changed. There's no question there. I think that's a good question. I like the idea of the football as well. A couple of texts here talking about football. Here's an interesting thing about football, too, guys, and we're going to talk about this as we get closer to the Super Bowl. But this push to take away and improve player safety, which is always commendable, 100% on board for that. But the rule changes that are taking away the spearing and helmet-to-helmet contact are now resulting in more lower body injuries than the league's ever seen. So, we talked to Dr. Mrazek about this just recently, and he just got back from a big conference, NFL conference in London, a collision sport conference in London, and they're really concerned about this. They're focusing on one behavior without the consideration of the effect on other human behaviors. And it's just changing the way the game or the way the injuries are happening now. So that's a big concern as well.
Has sports ever been like this before?
Never.
Like we're
never.
Because like, baseball is the answer, I still think, to this. But you could make arguments for every other sport in the changes that are happening.
You make an argument for golf.
Absolutely.
Because especially golf, you think about the landscape, and it was Tiger and Phil in the 2000s. And now, how many players are just that good that can win a tournament? I mean, it's the leaderboards are as stacked as I've ever seen them.
Well, now it's all about how far you hit the driver. Which is so different from what it once was. They're crushing the ball so far that there's some courses they're not even prepared for it.
That's what I was just going to say. Some of the classic historical courses
are just getting destroyed.
Are not playable anymore because they're not long enough. We're going to talk about
these guys
that
are absolutely crushing the course, and they're just ruining the record, or taking the, you know, smashing the record.
Yeah.
There's so much you could say in sports. It's just, it's that science, Jeff.
That's
science.
No, and it's true. And Maddie, you're true. We're going to talk about it coming up after the break, everybody. We're going to talk about Matt's golf game. Matt and I had a great conversation earlier this week talking about his plan for golf. I asked him how his golf season was going, and he gave an intriguing answer. We're going to talk about that next, and we're going to tie it into athlete development. But please keep the text coming. The text question of the day again: what sport has changed the most in recent years? Right now, inside the studio between Brendan, Matt, and I think the consensus is baseball. There's so much more to talk about in baseball. We haven't even touched on your Yankees and how I believe Cashman is a magic man. Him and Theo Epstein have really recreated baseball. Billy Beane has done his job for sure. But if you get inside your beloved Yankees, Matt, there's a lot to learn there. We'll talk about that later in the show. And we're going to be talking about Matt's golf game and athlete development right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everybody.
Chef Brian Duffy here. I've got a new show called Duffified Live that's unlike anything you've ever heard. Each week, I'm going to be talking to some of my friends, some people I've never even met before. We're going to be talking about people that I meet on the road through some of my experiences. We're talking about restaurants, talking about great stories, great guests, wild adventures, the whole nine yards. Get Duffified Live with me, Chef Brian Duffy, each week on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Jeff Groeschel here. Hey, we're your weekly source for performance information. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, as the man said, do get to us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Info at CrushPerformance is the email. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can check us out at Jeff Crush. And for all other social media platforms, which I'm slowly starting to master, it's an art form. It's a skill. It's also a ton of work. Instagram. Our YouTube channel has been a lot of fun. Check out our latest animation. Great information on athlete development. YouTube is Crush Performance as well, and Facebook Crush Performance. Matt Awanek joining us in studio. And Brendan, what's your handle? Like, do you have a handle? Like, do we call you Clack or the Clacker? Or
well, people call me Clack, but my Twitter handle is NHL Update, all lowercase.
NHL Update. Well, I can't call you. Hey, and we're joined in studio by the NHL Update. Does anybody call you
Clacker?
The Clacker.
Clacker. We call him Clacker.
Clacker. Way. Yeah, it's the Clacker, man. It's like con man's away. He's tending to his wounds and his hardships from Halloween celebrations, and rightfully so. But today we're talking. We had a great start to the show talking about which sport has changed the most in recent years. I appreciate all these texts. We're going to get to some of these. And when we started mentioning baseball, we had a lot of responses here. I think that baseball by far is the favorite, but a lot of people talking about the speed in hockey and the change of the enforcer and the change in the way that some teams are using the lineups. And I think that's true. A lot of that might be analytics as well, and the saber metrics and using players. So that's interesting. So let us know what sport has changed the most over recent years. We'll get some more texts right away here. Getting to our second topic here, Matt, you joined us in studio and I thank you again for that. I saw you earlier in the week in the station as I was getting some work done, and I know how passionate you are about golf. One of the topics on today's show that I wanted to cover because of the emails and questions we've been getting in the Crush inbox is about development, tapping into potential. And these emails are coming from recreational athletes, weekend warriors, serious competitive athletes, also developing athletes looking for college scholarships, pro contracts, but also we've gotten some emails from professional athletes, people who train professional athletes, and even some of the trainers out there. So it's been a lot of fun this last month as we've traveled around the world talking. But our conversation was interesting. I know how passionate you are about golf, and I simply asked you, hey, how was your golf season now that we're into the fall? And I think when we first talked in the spring, you had a goal of, I want to say somewhere around 30 rounds.
I wanted 30 rounds.
And I was just wondering if you got 30 rounds in, and boy, did you ever. So let's let everybody know how you're sort of organizing your life around work.
Yeah, I hit 61 rounds. This past Monday, I got to 61. Most courses are closed now or will be closed in the next couple of days. So there's still some nice weather next week. So I will look closely to see if there are any courses. But I think 61 is pretty much where I'm going to finish the year off.
Yeah. And I love it, Matt. And I'm intrigued by this for more than one reason, because you're not out there just to go have fun, though you do. You love the game, but you're actually trying to go get better. And you're much like my brother. My brother got into golf and he got a membership and he really, really focused his efforts outside of work. That's what his recreational time was. And not just going on and playing, but trying to get good at the game, which is a challenge.
Yes.
So let me ask you this. In your 61 rounds, how much did your game improve?
I would love to be able to point to a number and be like, I was averaging last year 104, now this year 95. I don't know, because I played so many. I didn't always keep track of my score. I just played different games and stuff. But a guy I golfed with mostly this year, buddy, I golfed with him last year, and he's the one that has told me your game has improved this year. And it has. You know, my driver for years, I battled major slices. Now, if I'm slicing the ball, and that's an if, it's still generally playable. I'm getting more distance out of all my clubs. I think last year I probably averaged about 220 with my drive. This year is probably close to 250 with my drive. So that increased. I'm getting my irons. I'm hitting them properly now. I never was. And I'm getting the proper distance you need. The only thing that actually has slightly regressed is my putting. But that's all mental.
Game.
It's all mental. That one's all mental. And I know I can get it back next year. But I've seen the improvements this year, and hopefully it can be there next year when I put it all together.
Okay. For everybody who's listened to the show before, listen, I am I'm really passionate about athlete development. I've been really, really lucky to work at the highest level of a number of sports with professional athletes, Olympic athletes, but I really love the developmental levels and what Canada has done with the long-term athlete development, developing athletes through a progression of developmental windows is absolutely brilliant. But here's what everybody needs to know. There is a strategy to getting better. It doesn't matter what you're doing. We could be talking about playing a violin. We could be talking about driving a car or becoming a chess player. The principles of getting better at something are very, very consistent. And I published a book this last year called The Performance Plan, and I had no idea what I was going to write about. And one of my athletes said, Jeff, just tell people where to start. And that's what it's about. It's just about if you set this foundation, this approach, you can build from there. And you've done it, Matt. You sort of set your compass. So now my question for you is, you've gotten better with your irons, your driver's improved. How did you do it? Did you get a coach? Did you break it down? Or what was your approach to attacking these skill sets?
I use technology that is available to us in the 21st century that wasn't available 10 years ago, and it was YouTube. There are a lot of great instructional videos out there that you could learn from. And for me, there was a guy, he's a PGA coach in Rick Shields. I found some of his videos. He's been had his YouTube channel for years. This year, he submitted a couple of series specifically on striking your club through the full from, you know, an 8-minute video on just the backswing and then the downswing, all that. He did it with the driver. He's done it on the slice. He's done all that. So to start the year, I watched those videos and I focused on doing what he was saying. And I have pretty much all year have kept referencing back to those videos. But I did not get a coach. I'm scared of going to get a coach. One, because I feel like they'll want to ruin my entire game, like change it all up.
Sure.
Or I also, you know, it's I don't know how I would go about finding a golf coach that would work for how I learn. Because there's so many different types of, you know, you can go to the courses and they have coaches. You can go to places like Golf Tech and they have people. But I don't know if they're going to teach me in a way that I'm going to understand.
That's interesting you say that, because even on the pro tour, you see the players changing coaches all the time. A coach has a specialty maybe in one area, can take you so far there. And then, you know, you need to get better somewhere, but maybe it's impossible for the athlete to know. Okay, so I believe coaching and mentoring is incredibly important. I like the idea of the YouTube as well, especially for the recreational golfer.
There are so many great videos out there that you can find, and all you have to do is look up what you're wanting to find. And, you know, you want to hit a good bunker shot, there's hundreds of videos out there that are going to help you through it. Yep. And just find the one that works for you and then go practice it.
Yeah.
Because that's the other part here is, you know, and I didn't do enough of it this year, but as much fun as it is to get on the course, range sessions are so important. Going and hitting a bucket of balls and working on your clubs, that's where you learn what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong better than anything else.
Amen, brother. We're talking with Matt Awanek. I'm Jeff Kreshel. This is the Crush Performance Show. Matt, listen, on the range, and you're right. Here's what we know, everybody, about mastering a skill. It rarely happens in competition. You get competition experience in competition. It's very, very important. It rarely, rarely happens when you're working with a coach. You get advice and guidance when you're working with a coach. But the number one learning time for top performers across the board, and listen to me carefully, I mean top performers across the board in any endeavor, is individual practice time, purposeful practice time. So that being said, Matt, did you go into your range sessions with a very succinct plan? I guess maybe parameters of what you were going to do and what outcomes you were looking for?
Somewhat. I went in wanting to hit pretty much every one of my clubs and work on them. There was one time this year where I was really struggling for a few rounds, and I went because I wanted to figure out what I was doing wrong. And so I just took the clubs out that I knew I wasn't working out. I just wanted to find, what am I doing wrong? How do I fix this? But most of the range sessions are, I just want to see, am I doing this right? And lining up and you know, when you go out on the course, you hit your driver, then it goes away for the next 5 shots or the next 4 shots, whatever it may be, an X amount of minutes. Sometimes you just want to hit it 5-6 straight times because you want to see, did I, you know, I hit a great shot on 12, but was that just a lucky moment or am I doing it right? And on the range, you know, you hit 10 balls, you do it 8 out of 10 times, you're doing something right.
Right.
You're not going to fluke out 8 out of 10 times, but you only do it twice. Okay, well, what am I doing wrong? Because clearly I'm just fluking on the other ones. So somewhat of a plan. Next year, there's a video that Justin Thomas posted of his, it's not a range session, but his sessions, his practice session right before a round of how, you know, he takes a club, hits five shots, and then he goes, takes another club. And I want to develop a pre-round routine.
Love it.
And just got to figure out what it is, like which clubs I should hit, how many times should I hit them, the order of it. But that's something, like I read a thing about putting before you go and do a round. It's go hit like five balls from 30 feet, then go hit those five balls from about 5 feet, and then go to 15 feet.
I think a lot of that too, you'll find a system that's going to work for you. But when we work with our pro golfers, and I've been lucky enough to work with some elite golfers, we have a very different approach. Here's the thing. I think everybody wants to, we have this peak by Friday kind of mentality. And what I'd love to do is I'd love to see, and you talked about this the other day, a 3-year plan. Mm-hmm. I love 3-year plans for development. Okay, you look at the quadrennial plan, the 4-year plan for the Olympic athletes. It's a beautiful time frame for our young developing athletes looking for college scholarships or pro contracts. I love 3-year windows. We start from scratch. We rebuild the athlete in year one, get a really, really good idea of where the strengths are and areas of potential. Number two, we start harnessing those powers. Number three, we refine them. And number four, we perform at a podium level for our Olympic athletes or at a personal best level for every athlete. Cause we don't compete against other people. We compete against our personal best. It's a great way to go about it.
Especially in golf.
For sure. But here's what I would say. We would have the same problem with a lot of our golfers and a lot of our athletes in other sports as well. They want to do it all. You cannot do it. Mm-hmm. So you have to pick times of your year to focus on certain things. So like a range session, a morning range session might be something like this, a 7-iron and 7-iron only. In order to master the 7-iron, you have to spend time on the 7-iron, much like on the putting green.
Sure.
So the 7-iron would be, okay, let's say it's 300 balls in the morning. We would break that up into 20 ball units. And the goal would be to hit it, let's say 170 yards or whatever the distance might be for that particular golfer with his 7-iron, and to get it within 3 feet of the hole 80% of the time, adjusting on every single hit. All right. The next day it might be the 5-iron. Sure. Then we might go back to the 7-iron depending on the success or whatever. But then you start mastering your individual clubs. Did you have, like, I know you had the goal of 31 rounds at the start of the season. Did you have, like, performance goals? Did you have, like, handicap goals? Like, what's your handicap
right now? I don't know my handicap. I've never calculated that. Going into this year, I generally was a high 90s, low 100s golfer. This year, I wanted to be more in the 90s and not have many rounds in the 100s and maybe get into the 80s a couple times. I did that. I feel most of the times I kept scoring would have been in the 90s. I did get 89 three times this year, which was my best rounds. Next year, then the goal is to try to be a guy. 89 is my personal best. Beat that. I want that to be next year. Get to 87, 86 or something like that.
Love it.
But so yeah, for me, my 3-year plan was this year was for years. I've hit the golf ball technically wrong. I used to like with my irons hit on the upswing when you're actually supposed to hit on the downswing. So this year everything has changed. Find how to properly golf, try to find out not just what I'm doing right, but when I do things wrong, why am I doing them wrong? Right. I want to understand what I'm doing wrong to try to improve. Because, yeah, I hit a slice, but why am I hitting this slice? Yeah. There's so many different reasons for that to happen. What's the reason that I'm doing it? And so I can correct it.
So wouldn't a coach be the key there, though? Wouldn't it be great or wouldn't it be smart in your mind to invest in a coach who can maybe critique you on that, whether you agree with them or not?
Well, but I did it with YouTube videos.
Yeah, but, the YouTube can't see you swing,
no,
though.
No, that is 100% right. But for the things that I also like to figuring out things on my own.
Right.
I'm that type of person that I want to discover it myself. So I'll go and I'll watch the YouTube video and I'll see, okay, this is what they're saying. And then I will go try that. And if it's working, excellent. If not, okay, back to finding the next one.
Do you video yourself?
I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, it'd be cool to video yourself so you can actually watch them when something goes wrong. Just set up your iPad behind you, like get an iPad stand, and when you hit, after you hit five balls, go back and watch them and say, man, damn. You know what I mean? That would be great. I'd love to see you do that. I really would. If you're not going to go a coach, I'd like to see you get with a coach.
Well, and the one thing I know that is out there, there are some coaches that are like high-end golf coaches that if you just send your videos.
Exactly,
man. They'll critique the videos for you and for a fee. So, yeah, no, it has crossed my mind. Hey, when you're hitting those bad shots, it crosses your mind many times going, I need a golf coach now.
Yeah.
And there's a funny video out there, a meme where it goes, The moment you hit one good shot, though, you're Googling, how do I get on the PGA? Because I'm there. But next year's the year I'll really determine if I need a golf coach or not. Because, again, this year I wanted to see if I can find what I'm doing wrong, find what I'm doing right, find what I need to do to be well at golf, do well at golf. And then next year is the year I want to put it together.
Yeah,
I want to have everything working and have rounds start to finish. And if they're not working, then it goes, okay, I can't do it myself. I need somebody else.
All right, we're talking with Matt Awanek, producer of the Dave Jamieson Show here on TSN 1260. We're talking about Matt's golf game. It really ties into our conversation about athlete development, skill acquisition, and talent. So, Matt, let me ask you this. Two questions before we let you go here that I have to get to. Number one, what about the physical side of the game? Have you done anything physically to prepare yourself for the game? Because here's one thing I want everybody to be perfectly clear. Whether you're talking about slow pitch baseball, dodgeball with the ESSC, or whether you're talking volley, it's tons of fun.
Love dodgeball.
Yeah, it is. Whether it's your rec hockey game or whether you're an elite athlete pursuing a sport, if all you do is play your game, you're really cutting yourself short, because there's not a sport out there that actually gives you the tools you need to tap into your potential to master that sport. So you'd have to do things away from the game to prepare yourself for the game. And golf is a very special one that way, because you can easily destroy yourself or your game if you do the wrong things, especially in the weight room.
Mm-hmm.
But you can really help yourself. So has the physical side been part of your approach yet?
It hasn't yet. No, yeah. I haven't. I want it to be. I'm too lazy.
Okay.
That's the problem.
Hey, man, honesty is the best policy here.
I need that motivation for it, and I'll start for like 2 weeks, and then I'll stop.
I think Dr. Fraser Crane would say, realization and self-awareness is the first step, Matt.
So I want to do it, but it's one of those, I know myself, and I just need to find that right motivation.
But it's way easier than you thought, man. It's way easier than you thought. So we could talk about that for sure. And then before we let you go here, two things you mentioned, the mental game, mm-hmm. and just, I want to know, how much do you think just getting that 61 rounds in experience, picking the clubs or knowing which ball to hit or which club to hit, how much did experience and help? And what are you going to do about the mental game?
I think that the rounds really helped, because even the range sessions could also only go so far. It's you learn different things. One about yourself, you learn different things about golf, you know, hitting off of slopes. You don't play on slopes on a range. On the course, you're playing in all sorts of different lies. You have to figure that out. So there's always different situations you're dealing with, and you only get that playing on the course. So that has helped. It's also helped to learn where I'm wrong mentally. You know, how that is, it's so important. And in all sports, it is.
Yep.
But in golf, you lose that mental game, and your round's done. You're not going to find it again unless you mentally get checked back in. And
skill.
So it is. I start the round and I know sometimes you just got to take your medicine. You hit the ball in the bunker. Just get it out. Don't try to be a hero. Don't try to go for the green. Don't try to go hole out or whatever. Understand that there's a bad shot, but let's just chip out and then play from there. And it's a one stroke. That's it. Just get through it. But sometimes you're just like, no, I'm going to play the hero shot, and you go and it gets worse, and then you just lose it. And so, I got to figure out that a little better, but I feel like I got that late in the year where it was, hey, I'm out having fun golfing. So this is a bad shot. It's a bad shot.
Yeah.
Just deal with it.
I like it, Matt. Matt Awanek. Okay. That's it for today, man. That's our session to learning from Matt. That's what we'll call this session. So listen, sometimes, and for everybody who's listening there today, we talk about this with our pro athletes. Sometimes your worst days can be the most valuable experiences you have if you frame them correctly. If you can walk away from a bad shot or a bad round with a clear understanding of why it was bad, you have a great, great chance of at least eliminating that problem going into the future or chipping away at it. No pun intended. So dealing with your mistakes is as important as dealing with your successes. Matt, great conversation today. Here's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see you set some hard numbers. I'd like to see you get a coach, and I'd like to see you get on a physical program so you can put an assault on next year. That's what I'd like to see.
I'll have to see if I can accomplish that. I don't think I'll get into the coach right off the bat, but the other thing I will be doing is some virtual golf this winter.
Yeah, great.
Just to keep the swing going every couple of weeks, and then when the season starts up next year, which you can't wait already, just get the shake a little bit of rust off, not a lot of rust, and just get going.
Yeah, great, Matt. Awesome. Well, we're going to follow your golf career now.
Excellent.
Is there an end goal? Like, you want to do like a club championship, or is there a tour?
Nothing
or?
Like that. I enjoy golfing just for the fun, and I just want to be an 80s golfer.
Yeah,
that's kind of the goal. A guy who, every time I step to on a course, I'm going to shoot between 80 and 89. And maybe there's that day I flirt with, I get into the 70s, and that's a great day. But if I'm shooting an 85, I could walk away pretty happy, I think.
Awesome.
But I feel like if I get there, I'll want more.
I'll want more, guaranteed.
And I'll be like, now I want the 70s. I'm going for that one.
That's a vicious rabbit hole right there.
Always want more. Yeah. It hit Matt. A ball 300 yards, but now I want 305, yeah. You know?
I hear you. And good on you, man. Hey, Matt, thanks for coming in today. Thanks. Great conversation. I really wanted to do this, so thanks for coming
in. A lot of fun.
Yeah, excellent. All right, everybody, we have to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, the Clacker and I are going to tackle the NCAA. Do we have the answers to fix the NCAA? And we're going to get back to our text question of the day, which is, what sport has changed the most in recent years? So stick around, everybody. That's coming up right after this break.
I'm Matt Zemek, and with Saqib Ali, I am the co-host of the Tennis with an Accent podcast. Don't you want tennis to be talked about the way tennis fans like to talk about the sport? And don't you want a tennis podcast that is tailored to a person who appreciates the sport of tennis? I'm not talking about the casuals. I'm talking about the diehards, the tennis junkies, the people who love the sport beyond just the superstars. We'll talk about Federer. We'll talk about Nadal and Djokovic and Serena and Halep. We can definitely talk about those players all day, and we're happy to, but we're also going to take you behind the scenes and talk about other players that tennis fans want to know a little bit better. Saqib and I talk to coaches, we talk to historians, we also talk to journalists and former players. We offer perspectives around the world in many different accents, and that's why we call ourselves the Tennis with an Accent podcast. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. Crush Performance. If you want to get us, you can go to crushperformance.com. Info at crushperformance is the email. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And for Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook, Crush Performance is the answer. Listen, you could sign up for our newsletter. Goes out once a week, just hooking everybody up with the world of performance, and also subscribe to the podcast so you never miss a beat when it comes to staying on that cutting edge of human performance. And speaking of which, great conversation with Matt Awanek, our good buddy here at TSN 1260, about his golf career. I ran into Matt earlier in the week, and he was asking what was coming up on the show, and I told him that we'd been getting a number of emails asking about skill development, talent development, and just athletic development, and that was going to be one of the topics today. And we just started talking about his golf game, and I thought that ties in really, really nice. Matt's goal at the start of this last golf season was to get in 31 rounds. He got in 61 rounds. So he's dedicated to the game, and he's not going out there just, he goes out there to have fun with his pals and stuff, but they go out to play a good round. And his goal is to be a consistent 80-ish golfer, depending on the course that he's golfing at. But good conversation right there, Brennan.
Yeah, I thought so too. I mean, it's nice to be dedicated. It's also nice when you get to golf that much, especially with the summer we had in Edmonton. Like there was smoke in August the entire time. Matt still got out way more than he thought he would. So nice to hear from that. A lot of texts coming in too about the different people's perspectives on teaching golf and giving Matt tips. So that was nice to see too.
Yeah, a lot of input on Twitter, which is fantastic. And you know, listen to it. The runners, they run. The cyclists, they cycle. The mountain bikers, mountain bike. The volleyball players play volleyball. The soccer aficionados, they play soccer indoor and outdoor. And regardless of what your sport is, there's a lot to learn from that conversation with Matt when it comes to, even if you're a weekend warrior or a serious recreational athlete, a lot to learn about how to go about mastering your craft. Because in my experience, regardless of the sport an athlete is involved in, there are fundamentals that have to be addressed if you're going to truly tap into your potential. I mean, don't get me wrong. Some guys or athletes, they're just good no matter what they do. They've just got that whatever it is. And a lot of that comes from growth and development in the environments they grew up in. A lot of it's that grit and determination and the way they approach their tasks mentally. But it's all trainable. it's all trainable if you know what to do. And a lot of comments on the text urging Matt to seriously think about getting a coach. He did a lot of learning on YouTube, which is a fantastic, fantastic tool as well. But you can't replace a coach. There's just no, there's a time where you need that feedback. But again, understand everybody, please, the most valuable time that you will ever have in terms of developing your skills is when you're out just playing, practicing or breaking it down on your own one-on-one, or where you're not being coached, where there's no guidelines, just out free play is the most powerful thing. And that's across the board. So great conversation there. Earlier in the day, we were talking about which sport has changed the most in recent years. And there's a lot of votes for football because of the rule changes that have come about because of player safety issues, and rightfully so. Hockey has changed quite a bit. Soccer has been fairly consistent, though I don't think there's a sport that uses data more than the sport of professional soccer when it comes to managing their players. But I think it's a hands down winner when we talk about baseball being the game that's changed the most in recent years. And most of that comes from technology and the data that we're now using to steer the game along. And on that note, if I were to ask you, Brennan, what Ricky Henderson's single year stolen base record is, would you know what that number is?
It's in the hundreds, right? But I'm trying to.
Yeah.
You know.
There's a few guys that have been in the hundreds, but Ricky Henderson in 1980, I believe was the year, stole 130 bases on his own. And if you watch Ricky, and I had a chance to talk to him, Maury Wills, I think, is the second one. He had 109 in 1 year. And actually, I had a chance to work with Maury Wills. Just fantastic. And Maury would always say, look, I'm not a fast runner. I'm just quick. He got good reads. He learned how to read the pitchers, and he's got those first strides, right? Ricky Henderson stole 130 bases in 1 year. Last year, when we talk about baseball and changing the game, it's changed so much. And base running's one of the parameters that's really changed. The Cleveland Indians, as a team last year, only stole 130 bases. And that's a really good depiction of how much the game has changed. Look, we talked about the number of relievers used. We talked about for the first time, we saw more strikeouts than hits in a season. Attendance is down 4.2%, but local television viewership is up 2%. So that might be a wash. 3 hours was the average speed of the game last year. There was three teams that lost by more than 100 games. We can go on and on and on. Baseball is a game of numbers, we know, but it's changed. Is it going to change back? I believe that baseball is going to be in a state of flux for decades to come now. Teams will respond to the shift. They'll respond to the velocity of the pitchers, and the game will have to change to accommodate that. So we're in a really interesting time in sport performance. And one other, I don't know if you call it a league, we'll call it an organization that's really been under the gun. And this is another topic I wanted to get to today before we shut it down, is the NCAA. And I wanted to address this in the summer. We just didn't have time, but the NCAA, Brennan, has really, really been under the spotlight, under the magnifying glass because of the FBI investigation into the basketball doings. And a lot of that stems just from money management. There's so much money there that there's arguments now that the players need to get paid. Are we there yet? How do we fix the NCAA? And there's a number of things we need to talk about there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different arguments that you could make. I'm excited to hear what maybe one of yours is going to be, but one of my arguments for sure is I look at the, and it's not like some schools you can't force to pay their athletes on the basis that they're so small. I don't think they can afford it. There's a lot of schools like that. But I think about the bigger teams, and I wonder about if a salary cap would work in the NCAA. And I only think about that because it would obviously be a lot lower scale than the major leagues. But it would probably help spread out the talent in terms of, I look at like a team like Duke for basketball. You have RJ Barrett, Zion Williamson. They got everybody that was a top recruit, it seemed like. Then their whole team is freshmen. You think about Kentucky too. Every year they get a million freshmen on their basketball team. Well, what if we made a salary cap in the NCAA? So you would pay your players, but you wouldn't like overpay them. So like the bigger schools don't have to go super, like, oh, here's like the most money that these schools can't afford. No, they'd have to still abide by the cap. and it still kind of be like the same style of recruiting in a way, in terms of staying under it and presenting your school and the opportunity rather than the money. It would allow the smaller teams to kind of get into it as well, because they'd be able to afford it based on the way that, it would be set up. Like, it'd be a hard way to set it up, but you'd have to make it so that the money was still low enough that those lower schools can still participate. That's probably the best way I can see it. But there is definitely like a few other ways you can do it. The Olympic model is another one. And the Olympic model would be players getting endorsement money, getting, you know, Nike's money and that kind of deal. What do you think?
An interesting question. So there's a couple of things I think the NCAA needs to address. And one is their antiquated rules. For there's so many rules there that are just inappropriate in this day and age. But you're right. The big conversation revolving around the NBA is the money. So the NBA, or sorry, the NCAA. The NCAA generates massive amounts of money with little or no expenditure because they don't have to pay the players. So, for example, the NBA last year, the NBA generated $7.4 billion of revenue. Major League Baseball, for the first time, broke $10 billion. The NFL, I think they're well over $11 million. And the goal for the NFL by 2026 is they want to break $26 billion in revenue. How they're going to do it, I don't know. Ticket prices are already expensive. That only goes so far. But if I were to ask you, and again, I asked you earlier, if you knew how much revenue the NCAA generated last year, would you take a guess at that?
Well, basketball alone would be massive. So when you factor in football, you factor in all the bowl games, that's going to be a really big number. Like, that's going to be that will be right up there at the major leagues, if not more, because of all the leagues that it covers, all the sports it covers.
Yeah, you'd think so. So if anybody out there is by their phone or their Googles, as long as you're not driving, just Google NCAA revenue 2017. $1 billion for the first time ever. They just broke $1 billion in revenue. Now, we've got to get a forensic accountant in there to break this down, because I believe I'm with you. I couldn't believe the number was so low. But even at $1 billion, without the players earning a cent, that is concerning. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about what's going on in the NCAA and players not getting played. You have talk about just the environment of the players working for free, only getting a salary cap. Here's my take on it. Pay the players and pay them whatever you want. I don't think a salary cap works, because it wouldn't be fair for the big schools as opposed to the smaller schools. The smaller schools are getting their butts kicked now, and even with a salary cap, they're going to get their butts kicked. So I think if a big school like Ohio State, who has a football or an athletic budget of like $120 million, if they want to pay their players or their top player $5 million to play and sign, let them. If another big school like Kentucky only has a $1 million mark, that's their prerogative. But pay the players. Set the revenue aside. And if the true revenue is $1 billion, let's split it between the athletes and the schools. You know, I don't have these numbers in front of me, but we know that the ratio between the NFL players and the owners is somewhere around 50 something to 40 something, right? And I think that's pretty consistent over the leagues. Major League Baseball, the players get 54% and the owners get whatever it is, 40, whatever the numbers are. So it's right there around that 50-50 mark. How about that? And then you have all the questions about the other sports. Well, hey, the other sports, if a school wants to pay their junior lacrosse team, let them. Why not? And if they don't, they don't. But I think we're at a time now where the NCAA needs to start paying the players. I'm not sure if there's a perfect model, but let's get it done.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And so you're pretty free market. That's putting you on the spot a little bit.
Yeah.
But would you support, in that case, a free market, but with maybe a bit of a luxury tax on the bigger schools that goes into another fund in the NCAA for their athletes in some other way, for injury purposes?
Sure, absolutely. And there's no question. And that's a great idea. And similar to the Major League Baseball luxury tax. And it's split amongst all the schools at the end of the year. Hey, you pay a tax if you go over this spending limit. Yeah, sure. That could work. We'd have to lay that out. And I think we just need to keep it simple for sure. But I think that would honestly work. I really, really do. And I think that I think that it could be a really good thing for sports across the board. But then the argument is, you know, I have three daughters at home and they're all athletic, and they go, well, hey, man, the boys are going to get paid. They're making the money. But what about the women's teams? Well, there's an equal rights thing. There's charters and there's rules in the NCAA and, of course, in the U.S. and Canada about equal pay. And so what a boom this would be for female sports if they have to all of a sudden, you know, have equal pay for the female athletes, and rightfully so. I think it would be fantastic. There's little downside. If we were going to go to a base salary, somebody said flat rates for athletes, $60,000 a year, that could be true, and then let them make their millions on endorsements. Agreed. That would be fantastic. But how about this as well? So how about you say, okay, you become a varsity athlete. You make the team. And let's say you're in the starting lineup. Okay, and I like the idea of maybe say a flat salary, $100,000 a year, or maybe it's $1 million a year, whatever it is. Let's say $100,000 a year. And if you're on the red shirt team, you get $30,000 a year if you're part of it. But you still, it's like being a developmental national team member. You get a stipend for developmental fees. That would be fantastic. But let's just say you don't get paid that money. You don't get paid that money till the end of your playing career. Whether you go on to play pro or whether you get your 4 years in, then you get that money. And you only get that money, let's say, if there's some kind of academic requirements and you get your degree, which is not hard to do because that happens. But let's say you don't get in trouble with the law, or you don't break any rules, or you don't get caught up, then you forfeit your money. Could it be a great way to keep some of the young people responsible?
I do like that idea. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one caveat I think I would have: pay them at the end. And I'm not saying chip away at it, but hey, look, hey, there's this pot of gold for you at the end of your playing career. Just, hey, do it right. To teach what it's like to be a young professional. And if they go on to play professional sports, excellent. Now they're really set for it. And if they go on to be a professional in business or at home, there's little to no downside, I think.
Yeah, there's a way to do it right. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's my two cents on the NCAA. We're going to talk about this more. We've got some people we've been trying to get on, but we'll do it for sure. We are out of time, everybody. I want to thank everybody for listening today. Brandon, I want to thank you for coming in to cover. Really enjoy having you on the show, man.
Always fun.
And I want to thank Matt Awanek for coming on and sharing with us his aspirations for golf dominance. Love it. So a lot to learn there. All right, everybody. Hey, coming up next week, the ski season cometh. We got a ski season roundtable coming up, getting ready for the ski season. And in the next coming weeks, upcoming weeks, the Crush War on Sugar will continue. And we're going to talk to the senior editor at large of Fortune magazine about his book, Humans Are Underrated. The landscape is changing, and we better change with it. That's coming up in the next few weeks in Crush Performance. Again, if you want to reach out to us, questions, comments, smart remarks, crushperformance.com is the website, info@crushperformance. Follow us on Twitter and be sure to share the show. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next week on Crush Performance.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.